This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. It is great to be back. I am Tim Murray. The summer months are here, and we're starting to get game times announced. Big news in the college football world today. Nothing to do with players or point spreads or realignment, anything like that. The football game is coming back. First time in a decade. We'll have a little fun with that to close out the podcast. One of the main reasons, to be honest, I am as big of a nut college football fan as I am today. A lot of it has to do with the video game, believe it or not. So big news today from that front coming out July 19th. All right, today on the podcast, as we get into the off season, we're going to bring in Max Olson from The Athletic, senior reporter there. He covers the portal and recruiting very closely. And what I wanted to do as we get back into the swing of things here on this feed is to take a look at the portal, the winners, the losers, because you can look at the 247, the on three, whoever you like as your recruiting experts' rankings. But what it doesn't necessarily account for is the detractions as well. And I'll give you an example. You look at a team that is very high in the rankings like Texas A&M. According to 247 Sports, they're fourth in the portal this year. However, they lost a lot of big pieces. Walter Nolan, who is one of the best recruits, transfer recruits out there, he heads to Ole Miss. Evan Stewart, wide receiver from Texas A&M, he's gone to Oregon. So I wanted to bring in Max and talk about the teams that hit the portal the hardest and some of the teams that got hit by the portal the hardest. So we're going to do that with Max Olson here in just a little bit. We'll obviously run down the quarterbacks. The list is endless of new quarterbacks, new locations. Who's going to be the starter? Is that an upgrade? Is that a downgrade? You know, could we see a quarterback competition at a place like Ohio State? You know, Ohio State went out and got Will Howard, and they kind of, I don't want to say became the butt of a joke, but people were wondering, who is Ohio State going to get? They get Will Howard from Kansas State, but they also got Julian Sayin, a once upon a time, five-star recruit, out of Alabama. Does he have a chance to take that starting job? So we're going to get to all of that with Max Olson. A little business to get to. If you wouldn't mind, subscribe, rate, review to the podcast. We're back up and running. Producer Steven has let me know that sometimes iTunes makes it a little dormant there. So the goal for the rest of the summer is to have at least one episode in your feed each and every week. We're going to have different guests on, different college football handicappers, college football experts. And then obviously when we get to the fall, we will be back up and running with multiple episodes each and every week. Adam Burke, Matt Eumanns, they will all be back in the fold with us and hopefully doing what we did last year, which was another successful season, breaking down games here on this very podcast. So I'm excited for the summer. I'm excited for college football to be back in our lives. I'm excited to talk to you guys again all summer long, have some of these great guests that we had on last year that helped us break down conferences in depth. And boy, it's going to be a pretty wild summer for all of us to figure out, wait, Oregon, Washington, UCLA, USC, they're all in the Big Ten now. The SEC brings in Oklahoma and Texas. The Big 12, they added Colorado. They added Utah. Who the hell is going to win the Big 12? So we got a lot to get to. And, you know, a salute to the Pac-12, who I guess is still kind of in existence with Washington State and Oregon State out there. They've got their agreement with the Mountain West. So, man, we got so much to unpack this summer. I can't wait to dive into it. You know, up front, I have not placed a wager yet, but we will get to some win totals, no doubt. We will wager on some win totals as this summer goes on. But before we bring on Max, I do want to hit on this. So I'm a big-time nerd when it comes to this. Jonathan Von Tobel, who is my co-host on VSiN Primetime, shameless plug, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern time each and every week. He was giving me grief for me predicting when these game times are going to come out. So we got some game times. We have some point spreads. So I wanted to run through a couple of these games and these point spreads that we have for week zero, week one, week two, and just kind of get the gears going of what we can anticipate. So week zero, we've got a handful of games, but Only one really of note as of this point, Florida State, Georgia Tech, College Game Day will be there. This will be noon Eastern on ESPN, Saturday, August 24th. Florida State, DJ Uiagalelei, their new quarterback. We'll talk to Max about Florida State and get his thoughts on what they've done in the portal a year removed from getting snubbed because of the Jordan Travis injury from the college football playoff and then getting absolutely obliterated by Georgia. Do they take out their frustration on Georgia Tech in Dublin? Last year, we had a week zero game in Dublin. Notre Dame won and covered against Navy, winning that game 42-3. Right now, Florida State at DraftKings is a 13-point favorite. Week one is pretty interesting. So week one, as we've had for years, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, it is college football's weekend until the NFL ultimately decides that they want to take over Labor Day weekend, which they kind of did with the first round of the college football playoff on December 21st. But how about this game? Much to do about Colorado, as there will be until Deion Sanders leaves. But Colorado, who brings back Shedeur Sanders, brings back Travis Hunter, did lose some pieces to the portal. Certainly another team that we will very much discuss with Max Olson. What will they do after a 4-8 campaign just a year ago? Did go over the win total at most spots, though. Colorado did, I believe, closing around 3.5. Didn't get to a bowl game. But how about them opening up the season against North Dakota State? Now, North Dakota State isn't the juggernaut that they once were. South Dakota State has actually turned into that juggernaut in the FCS ranks. But I am of the opinion that any athletic director that schedules North Dakota State or South Dakota State probably should lose their job. Like, what are you doing? This is a no-win situation, but it's going to be 8 p.m. Eastern time in Boulder on ESPN Thursday, August 29th. We've got a point spread there. Colorado is a 7-point favorite. I think I wrote that up for VSiN.com and put plus 7 there by accident. Friday, we've got a doubleheader. Not all that juicy, but we've got a doubleheader. Temple at Oklahoma. Oklahoma, the Sooners laying 39.5. Remember, Dylan Gabriel has moved on from Oklahoma. He is now at Oregon. Oregon, by the way, going to the portal and getting the starting quarterback from Oklahoma in Dylan Gabriel, and also got a once-upon-a-time five-star recruit, Dante Moore, who was committed quietly to Notre Dame, never officially, then I think committed to Oregon, ultimately played at UCLA last year. Now he's at Oregon, so that'll be an interesting conversation there when you look at that quarterback room. And then TCU at Stanford, you know, Stanford, as we all know, part of the Atlantic Coast Conference now. Stanford catching 11 at home, so doubleheader on that Friday, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. Then on Saturday, you know, sometimes week one has some great games all across the board. I would say for the most part, week one is fine, but this triple header that we have on Saturday of Labor Day weekend is really as good as we could ask for. Georgia versus Clemson, noon Eastern, ABC, Georgia and Ohio State. Folks, that's the discussion. Who's one, who's two? And then it's kind of a drop-off from those two. Georgia right now laying almost 2 touchdowns against Clemson. Dabo Swinney, once again, not going to the portal. 0 players in the portal. So he's just sticking to his guns and doing his thing down there, coming off of a 4-4 ACC year. I believe I heard this stat from Bruce Feldman and Stuart Mandel that Clemson in the previous 4 or 5 seasons was 38-3 in the ACC. They lost 4 games last year. So that game will be at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. Then can we bet on whether or not there will be a weather delay in Miami at Florida? 3:30 Eastern, that is going to be blazing hot. But as we've seen over the past couple years, you know, Florida opening up 2 years ago against Utah, pulling the upset against the Utes at home there with Anthony Richardson making some ridiculous plays. Both these teams are Florida-based, obviously, Miami and Florida, so maybe the heat won't be that big of a deal, so Miami at Florida. And then, yes, I'm a Notre Dame guy, you all know that, but Texas A&M Notre Dame, the intrigue level, the interest level in this one, as Jimbo Fisher finally fired at Texas A&M with a record-setting buyout there for the Aggies. Giga Maggie, as we mentioned already, and we'll talk to Max about this, lost a ton to the portal, but added a ton from the portal. And remember, it's not that long ago that they had elite recruiting classes. Connor Wegman, a guy that certainly could surprise some folks, could be a first-round pick come next year, the Texas A&M quarterback. And then you've got all the ties. You've got Mike Elko, former Notre Dame defensive coordinator, was there for 1 year in 2017, helped the turnaround, saving Brian Kelly's career at Notre Dame. And then he jetted for Texas A&M when he didn't get the money that he wanted from Notre Dame. Then he was the head coach at Duke. He is now the head coach at Texas A&M. Who was his quarterback last year at Duke? Oh, it was Riley Leonard. Riley Leonard is now the quarterback of Notre Dame. Mike Denbrock comes back from LSU after being the offensive coordinator for Jaden Daniels in a Heisman Trophy winning season last year. He's now the OC of Notre Dame. If you want to get even deeper in the weeds, Colin Klein. Colin Klein once turned down the OC job at Notre Dame when they ultimately hired Jared Parker to replace Tommy Reese. And guess what happened? He is now at Texas A&M. So a lot of unique storylines for this game. Notre Dame at Texas A&M, a Notre Dame team that's got a win total at 10. And you look at the schedule for the Irish, if they could beat Texas A&M at Kyle Field to start the year, it's on for them to make the college football playoff. But if they lose this game, the heat will be on Marcus Freeman in year three, and people will be questioning whether or not he can ultimately get it done. All right, a couple more games, just a note here. The Sunday game here in my backyard at Allegiant Stadium, Las Vegas, LSU at versus USC, I beg your pardon there. And I just want to run through this real quickly. USC, who obviously is a team that lost Caleb Williams and a lot of other pieces from a disappointing year just last year. This is who is on their schedule, folks. You start neutral site against LSU, where, let's be honest, the Bayou Bengal faithful will be in droves here in Las Vegas. Then September 21st at Michigan, September 28th, home to Wisconsin, at Minnesota, home to Penn State. Then it's a little, you know, Maryland Rutgers. Then you're at Washington, who, yes, what are they going to look like? Jed Fish coming in as their new head coach. Then you close out the year, home to Nebraska, at UCLA, home to Notre Dame. Right now at DraftKings, USC in game of the year lines is an underdog in four games already. LSU, they're catching 6. Michigan, they're catching 11. Penn State, they're catching 4. Notre Dame, they're catching 3.5. Win total at circa 7.5. Win total at DraftKings is 7. Folks, I would play the under 7.5. I am fascinated to see how Lincoln Riley's team fares this year when it comes to that brutal schedule, being in the Big Ten with all of that travel. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how USC does this year. And it starts here in Las Vegas against against LSU. So fascinating to see how that all plays out. Real quickly, before we hit a break and bring in Max Olson, Texas, week 2, big noon kickoff at Michigan. Michigan losing a ton, including their head coach, Jim Harbaugh, to the LA Chargers. They are a home dog. Very interesting to see that. Texas laying 3, big noon kickoff week 2. Alabama at Wisconsin in week 3. That should be a hell of a game to watch. Big noon kickoff is there as well. Is a bit of a bummer, to be honest. I don't know about you, but I am a believer of Camp Randall at night. That should be the way to go. Alabama right now at DraftKings is an 8-point favorite. And week 5, primetime ABC, end of September, Georgia laying 4.5 at Alabama. So Georgia and Ohio State entering this year, a unique year with the 12-team playoff. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. I am so fired up for the college football playoff to be expanding. What does that mean for the Big 12? How much of a leg up do they have? Because remember, 4 teams get byes and they have to be conference champions. So there's an early look at some of the lines that are out. If you're wondering about the game, Ohio State laying double digits right now against Michigan. Ooh, buddy. Ohio State minus 10 against Michigan. Do they finally get their revenge after dropping 3 straight to their rivals up north? All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will bring in Max Olson from The Athletic. Winners, losers from the portal. Who's where? We'll find all of that out. Stick around. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. As promised, Max Olson from The Athletic joins us right now, a man who's been covering it all and maybe a little breather now that the portal is pretty much closed. Still a couple guys trickling around. Senior writer for The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at Max_Olson. That's OLSON. Max, what I wanted to do, since we're kind of back from hiatus here on the podcast, was take a look at winners and losers in the portal. And what I mentioned in the open was anyone can go to 247, Rivals, On3, whatever, and say, okay, this team did really well, but it doesn't account for what they lost, right? So sure. A couple teams I wanted to hit on right out of the chute. We'll start with Alabama. You lose Nick Saban, obviously. When you look at some of the rankings, they're around top five, maybe number three, I think is what 247 has. But that doesn't account for they lost Caleb Downs, who was thought to be the best transfer out there. So let's start with Kalen DeBoer's squad. Were they a winner or a loser in this portal?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I appreciate you having me on, man. This, you know, for Kalen DeBoer, it feels a little harsh to label Alabama as a loser because to some degree it's like, what could you do about it, right? If Caleb Downs is going to hit the portal, you're going to have Georgia and Ohio State and everybody in the world trying to get him. Isaiah Bond transfers from Alabama to Texas, and that happened basically within a day or two of Kalen DeBoer getting the job. It's like he really had a chance to go win him over. You know, some of the players that moved on from Alabama, it happens every year of just like, hey, I'm behind a stud. I want to get more playing time. I'm going to go somewhere where, you know, those guys are going to get highly recruited out of the portal because they're coming from Alabama. And certainly, you know, they were able to bring some players with them from Washington. I think Jeremy Bernard is going to have a chance to really make an impact. The wide receiver coming in from playing in their offense a year ago. You know, you pick up some pieces that I think are going to help. But certainly, when you have a coaching change at Alabama, I mean, can you imagine if you're one of the top players on that team, how many DMs, how many phone calls you're getting saying, Saban's gone, come on down, you know?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, you know, just sticking with Alabama, Caden Proctor left, goes to Iowa, comes back. How big of it was for Kalen DeBoer, as we know and as you've covered? I mean, the portal for tackles is a hot commodity. To get Proctor to return, how big of a coup was that for DeBoer?
It's a huge coup, absolutely. You know, I think the big lesson there for coaches is, you know, if you pick up a transfer, a big time transfer for your program, don't let him go on spring break vacation with his old his former team, because you know, you wherever they went, they had a great time, and they decided he missed them too much and wanted to go back to Tuscaloosa. So that's a tough one for Iowa. That's a recruit that they had been chasing for years. He'd been committed to Iowa. He ends up flipping on signing day to go to Alabama. And, you know, Caden Proctor had his true freshman struggles, as anybody would if you're a true freshman starter on the offensive line in the SEC. But I thought he got better over the course of the year. I thought he played well in the games that mattered late in the year. And so to be able to bring in a guy that, you know, has gelled with your offensive line and who I think is his trajectory is pointing in a really good direction, that was a huge one. And certainly a surprise, but the kind of stuff that now that we're living in the world of unlimited transfers, like that stuff can happen.
Yeah, we'll also run through all the quarterbacks, because that could be an episode on, in and of itself. Who's where? What was the big impact? We'll get to that. But a team that was very busy in the portal, it feels like kind of an all-in situation, is Ole Miss. Ole Miss does lose Judkins, which we'll get to. At Ohio State, very selective, but the guys that they brought in were pretty impactful. But Ole Miss brings in around 20 new players. Walter Nolan probably being the biggest name coming from Texas A&M, and we'll get to the Aggies here momentarily. But 247 has Ole Miss number one in the transfer portal. Similar question, though. The defections, including Judkins, does the additions outweigh the defections?
I think so. I mean, I think it's certainly, you know, not there's not one player that is going to replace the production of Quinshon Judkins at running back for Ole Miss. And they picked up several out of the portal this offseason. They got Ulysses Bentley to come back for another year. So, you know, it's kind of the money ball thing. You're hoping that a few different players can combine to give you similar production. And that's it's tough to replace. But I would say they're still more of a you know, they're absolutely near the top of the list of winners. And I think that it's you saw Ole Miss. They looked at their schedule for 24. and felt like, all right, we've got a ton of pieces coming back here with guys that didn't go in the draft. Similar to what we saw from Washington a year ago of like, all right, we got a lot of guys coming back. Like, let's really make a run here. And to go pick up Juice Wells at wide receiver to complement Trey Harris, I thought was a big addition. To go win on Walter Nolan against Oregon, which is tough to do. That was a huge statement, I thought, for Lane Kiffin and definitely for Pete Golding and their defensive staff. And I think Princely Umanmielen coming, to play edge for them coming from Florida, I think is another important piece. Ole Miss has proven past few years they know how to evaluate other people's rosters, and when these guys hit the portal, Ole Miss is pretty quick to scoop them up. And so you got to trust that the pieces that they needed specifically on defense, that was the focus for sure. To add those guys, I think makes a big difference. They also picked up two of Kalen DeBoer's starting offensive linemen from Washington too, to fortify the offensive line. So really, in terms of attacking needs, Ole Miss as good as anybody this offseason.
Yeah, you look at the schedules you alluded to, and with now the playoff being expanded to 12, Ole Miss at DraftKings is -130 to make the playoffs. So they are a favorite to be in that field. Non-conference, very manageable. And then you look at the conference schedule. You get Kentucky at home. You get Oklahoma at home. You get Georgia at home. Your road trips to LSU was never easy. But when you look at this schedule, when you look at the talent that they brought in, Max, it does feel to me that it is playoff or bust this year for Ole Miss.
Yeah, if we had the 12-team playoff last year, I think Ole Miss would have been like the 11th seed. Obviously, you saw how they played against Penn State. I think by the end of the year, they felt like, the only games you lose are Alabama and Georgia, so you feel like you can kind of play with anybody else. And I think they probably would have liked their chances to win a game or two in the playoffs. And so you saw Jackson Dart, level up in terms of his play last season. And I think that gives you more confidence, too, in terms of, all right, let's go spend, and if you've got the QB, if you've got a lot of good seniors coming back, this is a time to shove the chips in. And I think there's quite a few teams that you could circle that this offseason they looked at a 12-team playoff format and they said, like, we're not that far off. Let's go, let's go talk to the collective and let's go do what we got to do to add the pieces that can really, give us a lot of confidence that we got everything we need to go make a run.
I was looking at your colleague Ari Wasserman's top 25, and he has Ohio State 1, Georgia 2. We'll get to those two monsters shortly, but then there's Oregon, and another team that you alluded to. They've got all the money in the world. They're very active in the portal, according to 247 Sports. I believe they were number 2 in the portal. Not a ton of defections, at least that I counted. I mean, here and there, but you bring in two quarterbacks, Dylan Gabriel and Dante Moore. The thought process maybe being to, bring back Moore for another year. And then, some other big time pieces. So when you look at Oregon, how big of a winner were they during this process?
Huge. I mean, and that was Oregon's another one that absolutely going into December, they knew, like, look, yeah, Bo Nix is going pro. We're going to lose some important players. But, after coming up short in these Pac-12 title games, and making a run at a Pac-12 title at the end of that league, they certainly felt like, man, we're just a few players away from definitely being a playoff team. And so to go get Dylan Gabriel from Oklahoma, like, that's a guy that should be in the NFL right now. And he's just, the most experienced player that's ever hit the transfer portal, basically at the quarterback position. And so to add him, and I think he can still take his game to another level. He played well, I thought, last season at Oklahoma. He was an all Big 12 quarterback, but you certainly felt like, can he go be like a Heisman contender type guy that goes and leads a playoff team? I think he certainly can be. They went and got just really premium players out of the transfer portal, whether it's Evan Stewart, the wide receiver from Texas A&M, who I think is setting up to have a huge year. I liked what they added in the secondary. Like, I just think, defensive line as well, picked up some really important pieces. I think Derek Harmon coming over from Michigan State, a post-spring pickup for Oregon, that was a huge win over a bunch of these contenders. So I think Oregon feels like they've got they're in a great spot. And look, the fact that Dan Lanning was not going to mess with the Alabama vacancy, yeah, told you, like, he felt like they're pretty loaded for this year.
Yeah, you look at the schedule, by the way, -215 to make the playoffs. So they are, behind Georgia and Ohio State, most likely per the odds to make the college football playoff this year. Road trip to Michigan late in the season in November will be interesting, but they get Ohio State in one of the premier games of the college football season. October 12th in Autzen. That game's going to be absolutely unbelievable. Before we get to the Buckeyes, Texas A&M, fascinating team, right? Finally got the money to get rid of Jimbo Fisher after another disappointing year. Really the only year that was successful under Jimbo was the year they, you know, got outside looking in of the college football playoff, the COVID year when they got blown out by Alabama in the regular season. So a lot of pieces go, but a lot of pieces come in. According to 247 Sports Max, they're number four, but you know, right out of the chute, they're playing Notre Dame week one. And I opened the show talking about, man, the weaving of this game where you think about Mike Elko used to be at Notre Dame as the DC, and then he wanted more money. Notre Dame said, go kick rocks. He went to Texas A&M. Notre Dame wanted Colin Klein. He said, no, now he's at Texas A&M. Riley Leonard was Elko's QB last year at Duke. He's now at Notre Dame. So a fascinating week one game. College game day is going to be there. But when you dissect Texas A&M, because I think this might be one of the more fascinating dissections, because they got a lot of pieces, but as you alluded to, Walter Nolan's gone, Evan Stewart's gone. Those are two of the biggest pieces in the portal, Max. Texas A&M, winner or loser during this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, if you talk about like the best players on your roster between guys that went pro and guys that went in the portal, I mean, A&M certainly lost some big time players, and I think people probably circle them as a loser in the portal from that standpoint. But look, they're going to have a ton of new faces this year, and that's, you know, they added a lot from the transfer portal, like 25 to 30 new scholarship players via the portal because they had to. And so we'll see on like the evaluation piece of that, like, did you get guys that are SEC good that give you a chance to go play with the toughest teams on your schedule? But I'm bullish on Texas A&M this year. I think that Mike Elko feels like he's, you know, I think he believes he does have a lot of talent on defense that he's inheriting and a chance to really, you know, piece together a pretty salty unit. You know, I think to add Nick Scorton from Purdue, I think that's going to be a guy that really stands out. He was one of the best pass rushers in the Big Ten last year and is going home to College Station and someone that I think is going to be very productive and is going to be pretty eye-opening for people. And then offensively, big fan of Colin Klein and what he does. And I think that Connor Wegman is just the QB going into this season that nobody's really talking about because he hasn't been able to, you know, he wasn't able to stay healthy last year. And so he kind of fade into the background there a little bit, but very talented quarterback by all accounts from people I've talked to that have worked with him. And I think he is setting up for a big year. You know, we'll see if he's got the right weapons around him after what they've lost, but that they are an interesting wild card team for sure, because there's just a ton of new faces there. But I think Mike Elko can also stabilize some of the like day-to-day issues that they had towards the end of the Jimbo era.
You know, that week one showdown right now, DraftKings has Texas A&M as a 1-point favorite against Notre Dame. College game day, as I alluded, is going to be there. We know Kyle Field's going to be rocking for that night game. The weather's going to be probably scorching hot. Notre Dame isn't a team that relies on the portal maybe like a, you know, like an Ole Miss, but they plug some holes, right? A year ago, they bring in Sam Hartman. They spent big money and they fended off some people for Riley Leonard. First, let's just look at the Irish and what their offseason was like. And, you know, can you make an argument that I would, that their biggest addition wasn't a player, it was a coach, and bringing back Mike Denbrock, because Jared Parker, who's now the head coach of Troy, let's just say Notre Dame fans were ready to pack his bags for him, whether that was fair or not. So, Max, what did you make of Notre Dame's, albeit short or small, but what did you make of their haul in the portal? And also, what do you make of week one down there in College Station?
Oh, man, that game's going to be awesome. I can't wait to see it. I think Notre Dame had a really interesting offseason, and I agree with you. Like, I think the addition of Mike Denbrock is definitely going to raise expectations for people just based on what he did with Jaden Daniels and with Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas and just that offense that was unbelievable last year at LSU. I think Notre Dame, you're right, Notre Dame is usually not in the business of the transfer portal very often, but they attacked the portal very quickly in December and picked up a bunch of players, very impactful players. You know, they really kind of made the decision. They went Riley Leonard over Will Howard, and that was one of the first moves in the game of dominoes that was the quarterback market this year. And I think they felt like he was a player. You know, they played him obviously, and so they had a lot of familiarity there. But I think they felt like he was someone that could really take their offense to the next level and replacing Sam Hartman. And if he can stay healthy this year, like, I'm very excited to see what he can do playing in a great offensive system. But I like, you know, they had to add at wide receiver. They added Jaden Harrison from Marshall, Bo Collins from Clemson. Chris Mitchell, I think, is going to have a chance to maybe be their number one receiver this year. And I think that those are, you know, you got to hit on those. Those are important. But really like them adding RJ Oben from Duke. That's a good edge player that a lot of people wanted in the portal. So I think that they were pretty, like, I think they made it, maybe it wasn't as big of a statement as some of these people competing to be the portal king, but they picked up some good players. They picked them up very quickly in December. And to me, it spoke to not just that they had needs, but that, you know, they felt like they could go get some premium players that give them a chance. And honestly, you look at that schedule, I mean, you got to be in the playoff if you're Notre Dame this year.
100%. No, the pressure's on Marcus Freeman. And you look at the odds for them to make the playoff, max around minus 165. And it all shakes down to, do you beat Texas A&M, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you beat Texas A&M, you've got a home game against Louisville on September 28th. You've got a home game against Florida State on November 5th. And then you close at USC. And who knows what USC is going to look like after that war of a schedule. So, yeah, for Marcus Freeman, year three, from everything I've heard and listened to, you know, from your colleague at The Athletic, Pete Sampson, and others, it's, you know, Notre Dame's kind of gone all in, so to speak. You know, they're paying their assistants. They've got NIL healthy. So it's going to be a fascinating year to dissect the Irish. Another team that was selective and probably bringing in some more premium players. You alluded to the fact that Notre Dame, and Max, you can speak to this more than I can, but I believe that Will Howard wanted to go to Notre Dame, and they said, we're going Riley Leonard. So ultimately, Will Howard goes to Ohio State. Very rarely is your landing spot Ohio State if you don't go to Notre Dame, but that's the situation. Look at Ohio State. They only bring in six players, but they bring in arguably the best player in the portal in Caleb Downs. They not only brought in Will Howard, but they brought in Julian Sain. So let's start there. Is this definitely Will Howard's job, or is there a competition at quarterback?
So yeah, it's a good question. And I should have mentioned Sain on the Alabama losses, because to lose a five-star quarterback like that who had just enrolled at your program a couple weeks before he hit the portal, that's a tough one to replace. I think this is Will Howard's job. I think they like him a lot. And honestly, when I talked to personnel people in early December when this quarterback market was kind of setting up, I think a lot of people looked at Will Howard and felt like, we can win a lot of games with this guy. And I think ultimately, you know, he went to visit Miami, went to visit USC. He, you know, there was a bunch of people in the mix there. And then ultimately, when Ryan Day decided after they lost the Cotton Bowl to go get a transfer, you know, that was a done deal pretty much. I think that's a very talented quarterback room. Obviously, it was interesting that nobody decided to leave that quarterback room at the end of the spring. So, you know, certainly, if you're Devin Brown and those guys, you feel like the competition's ongoing and you got a chance and that, you know, it's not worth leaving yet. But I think Will Howard is certainly the favorite to do it. I think Julian Sain's got a big ceiling. And, you know, I think this is obviously, it's a must-win year for Ryan Day. So there's more risk to go with the true freshman over the experienced guys you've got. But, you know, it's a great problem to have in terms of all the competition they've got in their building. And yeah, certainly to go get Quinshon Judkins when you already had Travion Henderson coming back is a huge deal. To beat Georgia on Caleb Downs was a surprise, I think, to a lot of people. And, you know, I think that Ohio State, you know, I'm sure that those guys don't come cheap, right? And so I think that's it's a big move. It's a big spend for a program that knows that, you know, it's not just for Ohio State. It's not just getting in the playoff this year. Like, you gotta do something in this postseason.
You can't talk portal without the Colorado Buffaloes. And I know, boy, your article, whoo, buddy. It wasn't even, here's the thing, and I'm going to defend you here. Not that you need it, but
go ahead, please do.
It wasn't a inflammatory article. It was just an informational piece. That's the way I looked at it. And I thought it was interesting to hear from those players. I know it led to some uproar, probably led to some more clicks for your article. So good for you. Let's get to Colorado.
I'll just say real quick, that's how it goes. You know, the Athletic is a subscription website, so obviously there's a paywall, so you kind of understand sometimes with these things. I've been at the Athletic for 6-7 years now. You kind of understand sometimes when people are really mad, there's a decent chance they didn't actually read the article, and that just happens sometimes. I think that was the case where the outrage on that spun into a very different conversation than what's actually in the story, and that's how it goes sometimes. But yeah, let's talk Colorado.
Oh man, they're going to be fascinating until Dion leaves, and obviously Shador's still there. Travis Hunter's still there, but a lot of pieces out the door, a lot of pieces in the door. So, you know, the floor is yours. 40 new players coming in. Last year, it was a revolving door. Some pieces hit, some pieces did not. The offensive line was a complete disaster. You know, win total is 5.5. So essentially, will this team be 500 or better, Max, is what the question odds makers are asking right now. How improved is this Colorado team from a year ago?
I definitely think that they are better, you know, 1-85 than they were a year ago. And I think that was the skepticism that a lot of people had when they, you know, cut 20 players after their spring game, when they had 53 scholarship players transfer out of the program after Deion got there. It was just, okay, you're moving on from these guys. We get it. They went 1-11. You don't feel like you can win with them. But are you going to get a lot better players out of the transfer portal? And obviously we've seen a bunch of those players they took after the spring last year have, you know, became backups and have transferred out. And now you're replacing them all over again because we have unlimited transfers, which in this case might actually be a good thing for Colorado. So, the attrition they've had this offseason, you know, they're tied for the most departures with Indiana among Power 5 schools this offseason. But other than like, Dylan Edwards going to K-State was a surprise, but there aren't a ton of players that you would say like, oh no, what happened there? Like, I think for the most part, you kind of understand why the player's moving on. And so once again, you have a Colorado team that I think they're bringing back like 30 scholarship players from last year's roster. So, you know, it's going to be like 50 new guys again. And, you know, their success this year will depend on, you know, what's the hit rate on all these new guys you've brought in. Obviously very heavy portal, not very much high school. But I think when you talk to people who are recruiting against them, they feel like, you know, Colorado did better this offseason in terms of the caliber of player that they were picking up and competing for. You know, certainly there's going to be some very specific needs that if they didn't get the offensive line right with all the transfers they took, then they're not going to be much better, right? So that piece is hugely important, that they get that fixed and they address that very quickly in December. I really like what they added on the defensive line. I think they're going to be able to have very good competitive depth there. I don't think they view Cormoni McClain as a big loss because they just had so many headaches with him in his freshman year. It'll be interesting to see, you know, they have a brand new running back room basically. And so can Dallin Hayden from Ohio State and Rashad Amos from Miami, Ohio, those guys come in, can they kind of help be tone setters for the offense? Which again, if the line's not getting pushed, then it doesn't matter. But can those guys kind of help fix it? Because, you know, Dylan Edwards and some of the pieces they're going to count on are gone. But I think when you've got a top 10 quarterback in Shedeur Sanders, top five, whatever you want to consider him, I'm sure they feel like they can play with anybody in the Big 12. I think they will be improved and I think they will be a bowl team, but I also think the Big 12 schedule is going to throw them some different curveballs too. So I think it's going to be, you know, they're once again going to have to start hot. And then you just got to avoid the wheels falling off in October, November. And I think they're going to have better competitive depth to be able to continue to play close games in a new conference.
Right out of the gates, North Dakota State. Good luck there. Thursday night game.
Just a classic. Who scheduled that? You know, yeah. What I mean. Whenever you see North Dakota State on the schedule, we tune in. We're like, why did they do this?
Why? And I said it to open the show, Max. I'm like, any athletic director that schedules North Dakota State or South Dakota State now. South Dakota State, by the way, open up the season against Oklahoma State, which will be a war. You should be fired. Like, no reason. No reason to ever bring those teams to your stot. All right, let's do some quick hitters before I let you run. Overall, biggest winner from the portal this offseason, when you think about players that left, players that came in, who helped out their roster the most via the portal?
So we've hit on a ton of them. I would also shout out, I think Texas did a great job in terms of the pieces that it picked up. Obviously, Texas knows that this, again, same expectations we're talking with a bunch of these. It's like, all right, we got Quinn Ewers back. Yes, we just lost like all of our offensive firepower to the NFL, but they love what they've got coming back. You know, they picked up Isaiah Bond. They picked up Matthew Golden from Houston. I think the receiving core is still going to be pretty strong. I think the running back group without Jonathan Brooks is really good. And so to get those guys, to get Trey Moore from UTSA, Andrew Makuba from Clemson on defense, I think Texas did a great job in terms of addressing its needs. I think Florida State always does a great job in terms of evaluating players in the portal and finding guys that you maybe haven't heard of who are going to be studs for them. And so there's some of those that you're like, maybe they didn't take 20 guys, but they got some good ones. And certainly what does DJ do at Florida State is going to be extremely interesting. You're certainly hitching your wagon to him. But I like what Florida State has done. I think to me, the biggest winner is, and we didn't mention Miami. Miami did a lot this spring. They did a lot. Miami shoved in for sure because they love Cam Ward and they feel like he gives them a chance to win a lot of games and really make a run at an ACC title. And so I think they were the big winner of the spring, I would say, in terms of the, you know, Damian Martinez from Oregon State and some of the players they picked up. Certainly there, that's another school that thinks like, all right, we're really close. And this is a year like Ohio State where it's like, man, it's got to come together this year too. So those are important ones to note too. I think the big, like, I love what where Oregon's at just overall as a roster. And I think, you know, some of the pieces that they added, you just really feel like they're a very safe bet to be, even with the new Big Ten schedule, I feel like they are a decently safe bet to like be in the top four at the end of this. But I think Ole Miss is what they did is huge. And I know, you know, Georgia's in great shape, obviously. There's a ton of teams on that Ole Miss is going to run into that are just as talented. But I think in terms of what they picked up and where they needed to get better, you could argue that they're you know, Lane Kiffin wears the crown at the end of this in terms of who won the portal cycle.
Well, with winners, there must be losers. And look, as a Notre Dame fan, and I don't hide it, I'm not going to lie, maybe a smile crept on the face a little bit when I heard Brian Kelly kind of complaining about the portal just the other day. But they're a team that didn't attack the portal all that hard. They were loud about missing out on some defensive linemen. I thought what Dabo said at ACC, whatever that was, I don't know if it was media days or whatever the moment was, just saying, hey, you know, we got transfers. They're coming from high school. I was like, this dude's something else. So biggest loser from their roster being hit and them not adding enough, in your opinion, in the portal cycle.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, I guess Clemson is ineligible to be a loser because they
they don't bring
didn't add anybody, which is, you know, and that's we could do a whole podcast on that. I understand what Dabo Swinney's point of view on this, but obviously you have to go look at what Brent Venables did in going to Oklahoma and saying like, well, Brent's figured it out. Brent's figured out how to turn things around by adding a lot of transfers and really flipping his roster. And, you know, I imagine Dabo Swinney would look at it differently if he was starting over at a different program. So I understand, I'm sure that they called Caleb Downs and called some of the guys that were in the portal that were, you know, really premium players. But you know, this is going to be one of those years where you find out, can just stick into high school. Is that good enough? Or are your opponents just getting better than you? Right. So that's one. I think LSU early on in the Brian Kelly era was very aggressive in terms of transfer portal. And they actually had a bunch of misses last year too, which really hurt them, especially on defense. They weren't as aggressive, I thought, in this cycle, in this offseason cycle. And so again, like, the few that you take, are you going to hit on those? I can, especially defensively, like, you know, we're going to find out pretty quickly. So curious to see with them for sure. I think naturally and unfortunately the biggest losers in this cycle ended up being Oregon State and Washington State. And it makes sense because at the end of the season, you know, these guys didn't, I mean, when Jonathan Smith left for Michigan State, like, they had not even like announced, here's the 2024 schedule we're going to be playing. Like, you knew it was probably going to be Mountain West teams, but like, I think for those players and those coaches, you know, obviously Jake Dicker and his staff stayed at Washington State, but I think for everybody there, it's just like, man, this is going to be a really tough situation in 2024. And for the players, you know, it's one of those like, man, you just want to go play Power Five football and you don't know if it's going to feel like that going forward. And so, you know, Oregon State loses DJ. They lose Aiden Childs, very promising quarterback who's going to Michigan State. They lose Damian Martinez. They're all Pac-12 running back to Miami. They lose Isaiah Bolden to Texas. You know, that's it's just tough for Oregon State. Oregon State lost a lot of really good players and had to add through the portal. And you just hope that they can kind of figure out a way to patch those holes. And then, you know, certainly Washington State losing Cam Ward. I don't think Washington State got hit as hard from the portal, but certainly Cam Ward is a guy that is coming back to try and prove that, you know, he's an early draft pick. And I think he has a chance to put together a huge year. So, you know, to lose a player like that is tough. And you know, I think it then it adds to kind of the stereotype with other recruits looking at those schools of just like, well, if all their best players are leaving, like that makes it less appealing to me. So you just hope that those programs can kind of stabilize after all the change they've gone through in the last year. And, you know, they're usually very good at out-evaluating others, and that's going to have to continue to be the case.
Yeah, I did sidelines for the Sun Bowl, which was the opt-out bowl because neither team had a layer of their starters. But you just saw the depth, and Notre Dame just pulverized them with depth in that game. And you feel for Oregon State, no doubt. You feel for their fan base and that program. But that's a good transition as we wrap on here because we got quarterbacks and new faces, new places. It's going to happen every single year. I'm going to run through some of the notable names, and maybe you hit your favorite or two kind of matches. So Aiden Childs, highly touted recruit. He follows Jonathan Smith to Michigan State. Cam Ward, as we've talked about a bunch, he goes from Washington State to Miami. Malik Murphy, who had a big spring game, right, a year or two ago. He now heads to Duke, where he's going to be hanging out with Manny Diaz, who takes over there. Brock Vandegrift, a nice add there by Kentucky. From Georgia, Will Howard, we alluded to him, Ohio State, from Kansas State, Riley Leonard from Duke to Notre Dame, Dylan Gabriel and Dante Moore go to Oregon, and then DJ Uiagalelei goes to Florida State. So I named a bunch there. What were some of your favorite matches when it came to the portal and some landing spots?
Yeah, there's a few that are just a little bit sneakier that I think are interesting. I think Tyler Shuck going from Texas Tech to Louisville is a super interesting mm-hmm. one. He's a very talented player. The Texas Tech staff could not speak more highly of him and just kind of what kind of leader and talent he is. And he just had the worst luck ever in terms of injuries in his time in Lubbock. And so for him to move on, I think he's like 24, 25 years old and go to Louisville. Certainly there, Jeff Brohm is had a huge year one and they're trying to, stay an ACC contender. And I think if Louisville can get 12 games out of Tyler Shuck, I think people will be very surprised by what he can do. I think Aiden Childs, you mentioned, is not a name that everybody's super familiar with because he was the backup to DJ and is, he's just a true freshman last year. But when you talk to his former coaches, I guess now his still his coaches at Michigan State, they loved him so much that they were just going to put him out there for every third series, basically, once they figured out what he can do. And he would go lead him on scores nearly every time. He's a very talented player, like very promising, like high upside guy. And when you're going through a rebuild like this, to have that piece for the future that you're going to have for the next couple of years, I think is a very exciting one. I think he will surprise people a little bit in terms of like, wait, who's this guy? Because, that's you talk to coaches who recruit him out of high school. You felt like huge upside there. It was a very kind of a late bloomer in terms of the way the recruiting industry looked at him. But man, I think Brock Vandegrift, you mentioned another one, is like, people haven't really seen it yet. People haven't really seen what he's been able to do because he's been behind Stetson Bennett, been behind Carson Beck. But again, you talk to his coaches, everybody at Georgia absolutely loves him. Kind of felt like he's somebody that if he could go to a little bit more of a spread situation rather than what Georgia does, maybe that's a little bit better fit for his game. But I think he's someone that walks in and makes Kentucky better, or at least helps them replace Devin Leary in his production for sure. So I think there's the big guys everybody fights for. And probably has to pay $1 million for and all that. But there are definitely, I think, going to be some players that are kind of sleepers. And let's not forget, too, Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, these guys that spend 2 years at a new place, big jump in year two. So I think there will be some guys that are not being talked about as much that if they're just in year two of their new situation, you kind of see them take it to another level, too. So you expect a lot right away because you spend a lot on them. But I think you got to have a little bit of patience as well.
Last one for me, Grayson McCall to NC State. People are going to be surprised that he's still playing college football. He was hurt a lot last year, had the great year with Coastal Carolina just a couple years ago. Last year was a dud with Brendan Armstrong there to NC State. Win total sitting at 8.5. They got a big game, I think, week two, Charlotte. They're going to be playing Tennessee there. I think ABC announced that's the primetime game. What have you heard about Grayson McCall's fit down there with the Wolfpack?
Yeah, I think NC State is one that should not be slept on in terms of the ACC race. That's a team that a year ago was, started 4-3 and then just went on a big run late in the year, had a top 25 finish in the AP poll. Dave Doran just did a great job with that team of kind of getting it figured out. And, I think for Grayson McCall, he was a guy that a year ago, a lot of people were trying to recruit out of the portal when Jamie Chadwell went to Liberty, and just the academic situation just didn't really fit for him to leave Coastal Carolina at that time. And, so he goes through a year with Tim Beck. But I think people are going to be reminded, I think, very quickly, because I think this is a good NC State team. And they added Waters, the running back from Duke, who I think is going to help a lot. I know Peyton Wilson's a tough guy to replace, but I like what they've got coming back. And I think Grayson McCall is one of those players. I mean, he's from the day we first saw him at Coastal, like, he's always been kind of an X factor of, like, one of those guys that's extremely fun to watch. And, you know, I think if he can get comfortable with you know, playing in the system there, a guy that has a chance to, you know, be very productive. And, you know, I'm sure he's trying to prove that he can play in the NFL too. So I think it's this is a make or break year for him in terms of really putting it all together and being a complete player.
Max, really appreciate it, man. And love the work.
Hey, thanks so much. Anytime, man. This is fun.
Thanks again to Max Olson. Great stuff from him. I know a lot of us are trying to put new names to new places. And I had to get in the Grayson McCall piece because as I was doing my homework, getting ready for this podcast and starting to, you know, get ready to start betting again, I'm like, man, Grayson McCall, you know, Brennan Armstrong was a complete dud at NC State, turnover machine. Fascinated to see that week two matchup. Right now, if you're wondering, NC State win total sitting at 8.5 and their week two line, let me double check it. I think it was, it's 5.5, which, you know, neutral site in Charlotte against Tennessee. There'll be plenty of, you know, Rocky Top there, but that's a fun new spot. And if Grayson McCall can stay healthy, I know he's kind of coming from that funky system that Jamie Chadwell had, but I'm fascinated to see how this will work. Tim Beck going to Coastal Carolina, that will be a disaster. I'm telling you right now. So I'm not surprised that last year was kind of all over the place. Another one, if they can stay healthy, and ultimately, I don't know if they're just going to have enough talent. But Curtis Rourke, the longtime Ohio quarterback, he heads to Indiana, and this is a Indiana team that, you know, we can have a little more fun with moving forward. But they bring in James Madison's coach, who had so much success, Kurt Cignetti. And, you know, that's a James Madison team that hosted College Game Day, was very much in the discussion if they were bowl eligible to be maybe the Group of Five representative, which ultimately went to Liberty last year. But, you know, that's a James Madison team that was phenomenal. I believe, if I remember correctly, did they win their bowl game? It doesn't matter. But Kirk Cignetti was a hell of a coach there, and I think a really big coup for this Indiana team. But it's Indiana football, as we all know, and that is a challenge, needless to say. James Madison lost their bowl game. Well, because they played Air Force. You lose to any service academy if you're playing them, and they had a bunch of opt-outs there. So as the summer goes on, obviously, we'll dive into more of the betting angles. But I wanted to start this off by kind of discussing the portal, who lost a lot, who gained a lot, who kind of stayed the same. And Max is as good as it gets when it comes to breaking all of that down. And, you know, the expectations are high for a bunch of these schools heading into the year. And, you know, we will dive into it every which way over the next 3+ months here on the podcast. So once again, a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Tell a friend, as my buddy Stucky says, tell an enemy, I don't care. Tell random strangers to subscribe to the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We're back, baby. So every week we should be having a podcast for you. And I think it's topical right now, and this is not betting related, but maybe you can bet on video games at some point. College football's coming back. The game, July 19th, EA Sports, they're back. The 10-year hiatus is finally over. Max was tweeting about it. Last time we had this game was NCAA football 2014. So I guess it was 11 years ago. But I just wanted to say a couple quick stories on this video game, which everybody is talking about. And to be honest, I started the show with it, and I'm not lying. Like, there are two reasons I love college football. You know, I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area. And for those of you who don't know, no one gives a bleep about college football in that area. And I became a crazy fanatical college football fan. One, my dad went to Notre Dame. My dad is not a huge sports fan, but every Saturday, always watch Notre Dame. So as a young lad, I would watch Notre Dame and see the passion that he had. And I took it to another level. And as many of you know, I have become a bit of a nut job when it comes to Notre Dame football. If anyone's watching there, I have a panoramic picture of Notre Dame Stadium on my wall here in my office. But secondly, it was the video game, man. Bill Walsh football on Sega Genesis back in, I think it was 1994, if I remember correctly. They didn't have the licensing to the team names. I believe it was like Tuscaloosa, State College, South Bend, all of that. But as the years went on, that was the game I played. I didn't play Madden all that much. It was always college football. I remember, you know, you'd go from Sega to PlayStation and you'd be playing a great game. Oh God, I got to go to, go to a baseball game. You leave the console on, you know, you put a note on it saying, don't touch it. I'm in the middle of the best game ever. You know, for me, the nerd inside me, recruiting became such a fun thing to do, you know, turning around these smaller programs. I hope most of you out there that played this video game didn't do the easy thing, right? Like, I almost never played with Notre Dame. And this is why I got to know all these other schools. And I think you're starting to see this with FIFA, you know, with people becoming more and more into soccer nowadays. But, you know, you'd go into the MAC, you'd go into these smaller conferences and you'd build it up. And I remember, you know, most recent college football game that I had, I think it was the 2013. I had a dynasty going with UTSA before they became the UTSA that they are now with Frank Harris and all of that and having the seasons that they've had in recent years. But, you know, it's awesome to see that the game's coming back. You know, I remember in my senior year of college, it was 2009, the spring of 2009. I lived off campus and my house got robbed. So we were away, all of my roommates, and someone left the door open. Sure enough, someone opened the door and came in and knew what they wanted. They took all our computers, they took all our digital cameras, and they took our gaming console. So 2009, that was Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. So in my room, I had a PlayStation 2. The only reason I had a PlayStation 2, you guessed it, college football. I had countless dynasties going. And I remember my laptop got stolen. My, you know, 19-inch flat screen TV got stolen. But these asses took my PS2, which I'm sure they could have flipped for what, $20? And I was so livid because look, at insurance, we got, you know, we got our new computer. We got a check from the insurance company. It was an inconvenience, but you could never replace what I had on those memory cards and those dynasties that I had built over years of blood, sweat, and tears of sitting in my dorm room and playing college football. But I'm fired up that it's coming back. It's going to be fun, man. I used to insert the names of players on my roster and, you know, I'm curious to see. Now I got to figure out if I need to buy a whole new gaming console. I haven't played video games in a long time, so I got to figure out how that's going to play out. But happy that it's back, and July 19th, if you haven't seen yet, is when it will come out once again. I'm so fascinated to see the intricacies, the portal, the NIL, how they're going to weave this all in. It's going to be incredible to see how it all plays out. But all right, a little story time there had nothing to do with betting, even though I'm sure all of us have bet our friends one way or another in a video game and made some money, lost some money that way. Maybe that was the origins of us betting college football was playing some of these games. But all right, that's going to do it for this podcast. Thanks to Steven, producer of this podcast. Thanks to Max Olson. Really great stuff there. If, by the way, you have suggestions or people you want to hear from, handicappers, analysts, whatever, tweet me at @1TimMurray, and I will try to get those folks on over the summer months. We are going to do, no doubt, in-depth breakdowns of the ACC, of the Big Ten, of the SEC, of the Big 12 as the summer goes on, just like we did last year. We'll have some Group of Five time. Also, Mountain West Media Days are at Circa once again this year. So we hopefully will have a bunch of those folks on VSiN Primetime. We'll put that here on the podcast as well. So we will cover it all every which way here on the podcast. So once again, if you've got suggestions, Fire them away. I'm open. Let's have a great summer. Let's get some good bets in the hopper, and we'll be ready to go come August 24th when Florida State takes the field against Georgia Tech at noon Eastern in Dublin, Ireland on ESPN. All right, follow me on Twitter, @1TimMurray. Catch me every weeknight, by the way, on VSiN Primetime, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, me and Jonathan Von Tobel. As always, please rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.